I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver and Daddy helped me make it.
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket and I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015, which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Welcome back to Immigrantly. As always, I am your host, Sadia Khan.
700 Marines are on their way to the streets of Los Angeles to assist the National Guard and law enforcement tamp down violent clashes with protesters angry over the Trump administration's immigration policies and arrests. Over the past 72 hours, pockets of LA descending into chaos.
Before I introduce our today's guest, I want to address something that's been in the news. Los Angeles, as all of us know, is reeling after a series of ICE raids targeting immigrant workers, raids that basically led to mass detentions and public outrage. But instead of meeting protests with empathy, President Trump responded by deploying the National Guard and U.S. Marines.
And when that happens, I have a little statement. They say, they spit, we hit. And I told them, nobody's going to spit on our police officers. Nobody's going to spit on our military.
This is a huge deal, an alarming escalation that hasn't happened in over 50 years without state approval. It's pretty messed up. Now, the way I see it, this is not just a show of force. It's a direct attack on free speech. Once again, immigrant identity is cast as a threat in a country that mostly constitutes of immigrants and their descendants. And I am always so disappointed and heartbroken to see that even to this day, immigrants are not treated as fully human or fully American. And I seriously don't know why. But I'm glad that I have someone today who calls himself a digital nomad, and his life gives us a snapshot of what it really means to be an American immigrant living somewhere else, in this case, Spain. Jeremiah Tittle is a fellow podcaster and believes deeply in the power of good storytelling. He is the CEO of Next Chapter Podcasts, a company that's really redefining how we tell stories through audio, from scripted dramas to narratives and branded content. He's part of an industry that's constantly evolving. And you know why this conversation is so important? Because it tells us how expansive immigrant identity is, how beautiful it is, how messy it can be, and the identity itself applies to so many of us without us even acknowledging it. Today, he and I are going to explore how his personal journey, his global perspective, and passion for storytelling all come together in his work. So without further ado, let's get started. How are you doing, Jeremiah?
I'm doing well. Better now that I'm on with you. That's the right answer, right?
Oh, that's so sweet of you. How is Spain?
It's alive. At least where I am here in Ibiza is we're in the beginning of the season, which is about half the year. It's June, so that means it's had about a month, month and a half to wake up from its slumber. So it's a beautiful place to be. I'm very fortunate to be here.
Draw a picture of what kind of town, city are you residing in?
The island is quite small. Pretty much everywhere you want to go is going to take less than a half hour to drive to, maybe 20 minutes on average. So there's a lot of little regions within this small island. And everyone from the outside of Ibiza, whether you have been here on holiday or not, you think of the clubs, you think of the entertainment, and all that is real and accurate. However, it's not the full picture. I live in the north. I live on a farm in the countryside. And while it does take me about 20 minutes to get to most of the clubs, it's not the only focus for me. I love the nature. I went on an amazing 2.5 hour hike earlier today, some of it on some dicey edges of a cliff, but it was a big reward and payoff halfway through the hike because you go all the way down to the water, you get to swim a little bit and enjoy the opportunity to cool off. So there's a lot of nature. It is more of a dry, cacti-filled landscape.
Oh, I was imagining it completely differently. Is the move permanent or is it temporary? Are you still navigating whether you'll stay there, come back to the U.S., go somewhere else?
Some of that is in the hands of the Spanish authorities. I trust that they'll approve my visa application. I'm hopeful. I've applied for it's what's called a DNV or a digital nomad visa.
Oh, there is a visa called the digital nomad visa?
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
The goal is to be able to be here long term because my partner is a DJ and producer in the music industry. And this is, I like to call it Hollywood for DJs. And I also very much enjoy the Spanish culture. And I am a big music person myself. I love music and dancing and going to shows. So it appeals to me. And the nature is wonderful. So I signed a 5-year lease on our home. Now, everyone knows you can always break a lease, but the opportunity and the idea of a 5-year lease almost cripples me, in fact, because it's such a long commitment and I like to follow through on my commitments. But it is a unique opportunity to potentially stay here beyond that.
Oh my gosh, I have so many questions. First of all, digital nomad. I know you call yourself a digital nomad. And how serendipitous that there is a visa called the same. How do you define that for yourself?
The quick answer, I would define it as a way to work through online means. So have a digital business such as my podcast production company, Next Chapter Podcasts. And you know, it's been a dream of mine for a long time to not be, as I would say, like handcuffed to a studio working in radio for as long as I did prior to the pandemic, coronavirus. And then one of the outcomes of that is not being required to be in a radio studio or TV for that matter, from my short stint as TV producers. But I have always wanted to have that type of freedom. The internet and its continued evolutions have allowed for that in this period of my life. So I've wanted to take advantage of it fully. And that takes me, at least takes my mind to even further places in terms of how I might be able to live in a place where there's a low cost of living. I wouldn't say that's been true for the places I've chosen thus far, except for the fact that, you know, I was living in the San Francisco area prior to the pandemic and before I was fully remote. That's quite an adjustment. San Francisco is so expensive. So
I'm pretty sure not just the expense part, but just the living part. Give me an example of the biggest challenge you faced or experienced in terms of adjustment personally or emotionally.
Yeah, that's a really, I'd say, somewhat of a difficult question because I feel so fortunate and grateful in the charmed life that I have led. I have worked hard. I mean, it's not without some sweat equity or, you know, putting in the hard work to get to a place to be able to do the things that I can do. But, you know, I think it's really more the culture shock of moving to different places. I think the hard work ethic of, and I know this is generalization, but growing up in Washington, D.C. and East Coast mentality, when I moved to California, I thought to myself, well, I'm going to outwork everybody because I have this hard edge. I will be the first one to the office and be the last one leaving, you know? And I think that lasted for a while. California did rub off on me. I have a man bun. That's one thing. And for your viewing audience, but I have to describe it for the listeners. You know, it was kind of interesting joining a tech company and at TuneIn Internet Radio, as I mentioned, based in the Bay Area in San Francisco. And the idea that this tech mentality is very much a hardworking culture, you know, staying in the office and, you know, maybe you never saw the sun that day.
So that's what I thought. Like San Francisco, I thought, is very different from LA. When I think of LA, I think it's more laid back, but it seems like San Francisco is more laid back than DC or New York.
It could be. I guess it just depends on the company, the corporate culture, perhaps, in these environments and maybe your specific division. I remember just days on end, whether it was I was involved in a lot of travel, in addition to kind of the, I wouldn't even call it a 9-to-5. It was beyond that. Especially when the boss was in the office. You know, I think, again, I was very fortunate in all these situations, but I do think if you are, let's say you're a founder of a startup in Palo Alto or anywhere in the San Francisco Bay Area, or even LA, as much as tech is, you know, ventured down there, you really get out of it what you put into it. And therefore, you're working on your dream and on your vision. And so even if I was an employee for a tech company, there is an expectation that you're going to be there for long hours and you're going to make sure you get your reports done, that you're, you know, that you're very much focused on pleasing your boss, building the decks that you need to build for your partnerships, et cetera. And so I think that's why I was able to finally relax. And I talk about the culture shock and the change of maybe going from broadcasting to tech wasn't so drastic. I think it was more once you become a remote employee and you don't have a boss breathing down your neck, you are your own boss. And so you have to figure out what is your corporate culture going to be? What is, you know, and so a lot of the key learnings from having the experience of working in satellite radio in DC, originally with XM radio and then Sirius XM radio, is I had a boss in New York who was not afraid to send text messages on a Saturday with 10 exclamation points, you know, and it's that pain, that association that you have that you're like, you want to cross all your T's, dot all your I's and make sure that you're doing everything as close to perfect as possible. But then that's just a recipe for burnout, ultimately.
That's true. But you started this conversation with work ethic. So how is work ethic different in Spain? And how is corporate culture within your organization different?
Spain has the siesta, which is a beautiful, amazing, wonderful concept that you would break up your day and have, maybe you do a little work in the morning, kind of knock out a few things on your to-do list, and then you're having a long lunch, probably, and then everything's closed from 2 to 4 p.m., and therefore nothing's going to get done. Then after 4, you get back to the office and you can get the rest of your work done. I've always felt it's such a beautiful cultural concept. And turning the attention now to my company, I am kind of a product of all that pain I felt from my New York boss and the weekend text messages. I never wanted to be that boss, that manager. I wanted to be empathetic. I wanted to, you know, and I still aspire to just be understanding and supportive and create and maintain a corporate culture that is, I think, just a little bit more lenient and we're all human. We all make mistakes. I don't know if that would fly if I went right back into some New York East Coast mentality.
Do you think ambition and empathy are mutually exclusive?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Absolutely not mutually exclusive, but there are times I doubt my approach. I think I continue to, you know, maintain that this is the right thing because I feel like the trauma I experienced, which I think is accurate, but maybe exaggeration depending on the moment. There are times I rethink it or I question it and say, maybe I need to be tougher. Maybe I need to be tougher on myself. Maybe I need to be tougher on the staff, because if they see that I'm a pushover, does that mean that they're not going to care as much? So those are the things that really kind of circle my head in key moments where I'm like, man, maybe I need to drive a harder rule with an iron fist or something to that effect. It's not in my nature to do so. I was raised by Christian pastors that, yeah, I was definitely raised to be, I think, more soft on people and my relationships. But I think the leading by example is what I come back to, that you can live anywhere in the world if you work for me. I don't care. If you get your work done, then I respect however you did it, then more power to you.
Do you ever feel like your identity as an outsider in Spain gives you a different kind of creative freedom? Or does it feel isolating?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I do feel isolated at times. When I talk about I haven't gotten too deep into the feelings of homesickness. And when Spanish is the first language, when you live in a place where the first language is not your own, that breeds over time some exhaustion. Emotional exhaustion, logistical. There's some times where I'm just tired and I don't feel like ordering in Spanish at the restaurant.
How good is your Spanish?
It's not bad. My partner laughs at me at times because I keep trying. You know, I think in general, though, the universal takeaway of the culture shock that I've felt in moving around a number of different times, it can be very isolating and can make you feel like you're alone, or tonight I just don't have the energy to make an effort.
You know, I can totally relate to it. Although I grew up speaking English, it was my second language. But there are times when I just want to take a pause and speak Urdu or Pashto, which is my mother tongue, as I would describe it. You are basically an immigrant in Spain.
It's true. I think the specific island I'm on, which is been overrun by the British for many decades.
The British. Oh my God. They really messed up the world, didn't they?
They certainly did. The sun never sets on the British Empire. But
it eventually did.
Yes. Yes. No, it's true. And if you look at this island of Ibiza, the British have found every nook and cranny of it. And I appreciate the fact that there's so much English spoken, even if it's a different accent. I work in a co-working space and there's a lot of Brits here. And it makes me feel just a bit more comfortable that English is spoken as much as it is. But another thing, you know, I'm in awe of you when you talk about your third or fourth language being English and all these podcasts that you're hosting in English. I think that is well beyond, you know, my skill set and what I've been able to attain in terms of being able to navigate, you know, Spanish countries to a degree. I mean, I lived in Miami for a couple of years and that really helped, like, live in a place where Spanish is the first language spoken. And I just love the Latin culture and more of a familial, jovial, when you compare it to a New York or a DC. That I really appreciated, and I'm so glad I get the opportunity to experience it, this version of it here in Spain.
You mentioned being homesick. When you think about home now, that you've lived somewhere else, you are living somewhere else, is it a place, a feeling, or something else completely?
You know, there's poetry that has been written for years that I have even written, that home is, you know, where the heart is. It's where the people that you love are. I would say home is many places, physical places. It is Washington, D.C. It's Maryland, where I grew up, Virginia, where I was born, and California, Miami, the different places I've lived now. Hawaii for 4 years I lived during the pandemic and following before I moved here to Spain. And they're all home, these physical places, because I haven't stayed in the same place and because I've experienced these different cultures and found a way to understand them more and respect the qualities, the positives, the negatives. Even recently, with a lot of the stories coming out of Los Angeles, whether it be the fires or the protests or what have you, you know, my heart goes out to the people that I love that are still there and I still visit. But yeah, home is intangible concept. It's something you try to grasp and maybe you never fully reach when you've lived in so many places. I spent the first 30 years of my life in Washington, D.C. And I'm not a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, but I like to think of Bruce, the boss, as an artist, a poet, a musician who has done a phenomenal job of explaining the feeling oftentimes associated when you're a teenager of wanting to leave your hometown. Like, get me out of here. The people around me are going nowhere. Like, I really need to get out. And I think that's just such a common feeling amongst, you could say, young people, but it continues. When I go back sometimes, I'm like, I can't take too much of this place. Like, being, this is not a slight on Washington, D.C. specifically. It's just more, there's people I love here, but it doesn't feel like home anymore. And so I need to kind of spread my wings and fly bird out of the nest, experience what else this world has to offer. So I guess it's a very long answer to your short question, but I'd say home is less of a physical place than it ever has been for me. It is much more the people I'm closest to and the new friends I may meet. The home that I now live in, that I signed a crazy 5-year lease for, that I, who knows, maybe I will spend 5 or more years there, and that'll feel more like home when we check in 5 years from now.
You know, Jeremiah, I've talked so much about immigrant identity, especially having lived in the U.S. for over 20 years now. And I do think that U.S. has such a love-hate relationship with immigrants and immigrant identity. And it's mostly misunderstood, because when people think of immigrants, they really box them into these neatly labeled ideas of who they think immigrants are. And it really bothers me, because it reduces our humanity to a mere immigration status. But I'm curious to know, living in a different country, how do you see that identity play out for you individually, like internally, and how do other people perceive you as an outsider?
Well, I mean, it's true, I'm a minority in the specific area I'm in. There are other Americans. When I hear an American accent, I said, hey, wait a second. You got to pull someone aside. I actually met someone from Washington, D.C., who also works in my co-working space. And I mean, you know, just bonded pretty quickly with him. It's an interesting exercise to, maybe it's more of an imagination or the perception, because I can't get inside someone else's head, but I do feel here that I feel accepted for the most part, which is a beautiful thing. I know that's not the case for so many people. So I feel that, like, that's such a luxury that someone would care enough to get to know me and not judge me immediately based on being an American.
They're not judging you based on being an American? Seriously? I'm shocked.
You would think that would
think
be the case.
I would think that too. Come on. I'm just kidding. Just joking.
No. You're not wrong. You're not wrong, because my partner is originally from East Germany, and she has drilled it in my head that Americans have a tendency to be quite annoying.
But going back to the original question, you at least feel accepted.
I do here. I do. I think there's something specific to living on an island where we're kind of all in this together. The same was true on Maui and Hawaii. I would not say that's the case for California and these big cities I've lived in, LA and San Francisco, necessarily. Washington, D.C., the same thing. I mean, there is a degree of we're kind of in this for ourselves. Is there community? Absolutely. Do people in Washington, D.C., you know, help shovel the snow off your driveway if there's like an elderly neighbor or something to that effect? It does happen. And those are the moments when there's where some big disaster. But I think those are kind of the uniform moments where it's like, okay, the common person is respected and cared for, where they seem more rare there, as opposed to the fact that I'm living on an island now and lived on an island for the 4 years prior. And yeah, there's much more of a, I'd say, a respect for the land naturally and for your fellow brother and sister.
Pivot and talk about podcasting. I mean, come on, you're a podcaster. How can we not talk about the medium itself?
Please, would love to.
For me, podcasting is such an intimate medium. You know, the ear, the pauses, the pacing. What do you think makes audio, podcasting especially, uniquely powerful for storytelling?
I think removing the visuals, isolating your focus. These earbuds I have in my ears are going right to my brain. So there's not a lot of filters or distraction that a video sometimes creates. Your mind is actively listening to every word coming out of my mouth right now as I talk into this microphone. And I think my soul is a little bit more naked or bare for you to maybe get to the gist of what I'm truly trying to say without, again, any distractions or interference or commotion, especially with the way TV is these days. I worked in sports radio for a long time. And at one point, I met the person who works on a show on ESPN called PTI, Pardon the Interruption, two old journalists just yelling at each other all day long. They're very talented journalists. This is not a slight on them. But the producer who created the ticker or the crawl or the kind of what's coming up on the side of your screen. Now it's kind of like Hollywood Squares in terms of what we're used to with the Zooms. So you have, you know, nine people commenting on an issue. There's just so much visual distraction. And yeah, I know TV and the cutting of cords and cable, et cetera, is very much a reality. So, you know, people are watching their The Last of Us, like I am on HBO Max or Max or whatever. And you do get the opportunity to kind of focus on a series visually, but there's nothing like podcasting in terms of returning to our roots. When we were cavemen and cavewomen and sitting around a fire and, you know, telling a story that maybe was passed down from generation to generation, maybe you're adding a little extra sauce to it. So It's a better story than the way your mother or father told you. That embellishment and continued evolution, but you can still have that core of the lesson. That is something that's not going out of style. It's our return to storytelling and the way it was done now with technology, allowing us to hear and maybe pass on kind of the water cooler talk, which, you know, what is your thought on this like big trendy hot button issue? But I'd say just with a little bit more greater opportunity for wisdom to be passed along.
I really like that. But podcasting is also changing, right? Now we have video podcasts And although I like the idea because it lends itself for broader outreach, my concern is it's at the expense of our imagination and the intrigue, intimacy element that audio podcasting is really known for. What are your thoughts?
I totally agree. I've asked so many guests, yourself included, about video on podcasts, on my podcast, Your Next Chapter. And I just feel that, I guess one of my philosophies is that you should be everywhere in terms of your distribution strategy. And I say should is kind of a rude word. I kind of don't like should at all. Should, could, would, they're dirty words in my book. But
why? I'm curious.
I just think, like, you know, you make your own decisions. And I understand there's something to a sales pitch that you're creating FOMO, like you're missing out on this whole video opportunity. If you don't do that for YouTube, then, you know, someone who only uses YouTube to consume content won't have the opportunity to discover your content because you didn't put any content there. I know some people put a static image of their show logo or some specific episode art on YouTube and then, you know, maybe bouncing levels or something. You can listen to it still.
You and I talked about the industry itself on your podcast when I was on it. I have so many thoughts. I could write a whole book about what I think, how the podcasting industry has evolved, how it's operating, what are some of the gaps, drawbacks of being an independent podcast company. But I really want to hear from you. We've seen this enormous consolidation of podcast industry like Spotify, Amazon, major networks, Wondery, Lemonada just got sold. Everybody in the podcasting space is talking about that. Is there a space for independent podcast companies to thrive, not just to exist?
There was more space for independent podcast production companies like ours. And I should say, actually, before I directly answer your question, I'm so in awe of everything you've built. I think it's really cool.
Oh, you're too kind.
You know, I just think it was so smart. And when I forget where I first saw the mention of what you built, but I thought this is brilliant. But yeah, I mean, I think to answer your question, I think it's just there's less and less room in the industry for what we are doing. I think the consolidation is a product of the industry needing greater solvency.
Yeah.
And in the past, I think analytics were so difficult to grasp. I think there was just so, it was such a wild, wild west in a kind of gray black box, to use too many metaphors, before. And now, as there's greater need for transparency and greater interest from outside parties or this kind of market correction, I like to call post the M&A activity, which took place, you know, between 2018 and 2021, 2022. And even though I love to quote my pal Chris Peterson of Download Media talking about kind of the rumor of the demise of the industry being greatly exaggerated, I totally agree that the podcast industry has continued to expand, even if it seemed like, oh, everybody's got a podcast and now, you know, there's not as much acquisition activity, so therefore it's slowing down. But I don't think it ever slowed down. I think maybe the acceleration of its growth maybe slowed down a bit, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't continuing to grow throughout this period of time. So I think there's less room for us. I'm not going to beat around the bush and say that. It doesn't mean there aren't areas that aren't explored or explorable in terms of great ideas like yours and the way that you've fashioned your business. And I feel so fortunate in our business that we have folks who care about what we're doing, both listeners and supporters of what we do. So for me, the goal is to just not be caught flat-footed, to continue to like, all right, what is something new that we can do? Or how can we do this in a new way? Or how do we pay attention? Why do I go to all these conferences to understand where it's going? Well, hopefully that guides me.
Oh, do you go to these conferences? I have never been, and I think I'm missing out on something by not going. I think I should start going more.
Well, I'd love to hang out with you, so you should totally go. But I don't know. I mean, you could also be just very focused on, you know, what you're doing and keep building this. And I think your gut and intuition, it seems very strong to me, because I think it's super novel. I know I'm being overly nice to you, so please.
I love that. I'll take all the compliments.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Tinder presents How to Become a Runner. Wake up at 5 a.m. Go for a run. Get blisters. Make running your personality. Miss work drinks for your long run. Meet a new friend. Shin splints. Join a run club. Go once. Or you can train alone. Or find someone on Tinder who actually enjoys early morning runs too, just like Charles and Melanie did. Wherever it takes you, it starts with a swipe. Tinder.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compasa Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with Compasa Market. Simples.
When you take out a qualifying product to compare the market. One membership per year, participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
Storytelling is at the heart of podcasting. What elements make a story truly compelling?
I think the idea that the story being told applies to the person listening, that there's some kernel of truth or connectivity to, even if the experience of the story isn't something I directly relate to, maybe I know someone or someone in my family has experienced something like this. I think there is an element of like fantastical or maybe magic or like, what is something extreme that maybe happened to someone? This American Life is built on the kind of everyday stories, right? Something that's so approachable and maybe not so magic, but a funny thing happened on the way to the X, or, you know, that there is something that was that stood out and makes you think twice about something you assumed was true or was always the case. But I think, yeah, the storytelling and in the podcast space, I believe it's here to stay. I mean, last year when the report came out that half of America had listened to a podcast in the last month, I thought, that's the moment, right? What's the percentage now?
56%.
56%. I mean, how can you argue with that? And I started to go down this road earlier to say this, but I just will double down on this to say that we are overstimulated and podcasts are popular because of that. It's a reaction. Humans want to hear a story. They want to hear something that is going to make them feel good. They want to hear something that's going to make them understand all the different ways a serial killer will kill them on their way home.
Oh my gosh, that's me. That's me. I listen to true crime a lot. I shouldn't be.
I had to go there. I think it's a way, particularly for women, to make them feel like more control over their, you know, their lives. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and deny the power of these stories being told and how, yeah, just again, that intimacy of approaching through the ears, right into the brain, someone's voice, you trust them, you hear, you know, even the slightest stutter or pause, that pregnant pause can be so powerful. And I love reading, but it's just a completely different thing, the audio format.
So before I let you go, I have rapid fire. You'll answer these questions and then we'll wrap it up with my favorite question, which is define America. So we'll start with rapid fire. What was the last podcast you listened to that made you jealous in the best way?
The last podcast that I listened to that made me jealous in the best way was Immigrantly. You may have heard of it. Okay, that's cheating.
That is cheating. Let's go somewhere else.
I would say Wiser Than Me. It's not that I thought Julia Louis-Dreyfus would come and host a show for Next Chapter Podcasts. I think it was just, she's just perfect for it. And I think the way that she gets obviously phenomenal guests, but gets them to really just be so back to this, like just stripped down and just real and themselves. Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Wiser Than Me, you're getting these life lessons from a woman that, like, you only know really her. She's acted in obviously Seinfeld and Veep, but you get to know her too, which I just think is really cool.
I mean, look, America is a very ageist society. And through that podcast, they're really making being older relevant, right? And that's what I love about the podcast itself. And I am a big fan. So yeah, that makes total sense. Scripted or unscripted? Which is harder to pull off?
Scripted. Unscripted. Improv. I've been told between comedians in the improv space, you're yes and versus the comedians in the stand-up space. Like, these are two different animals. Some people can play in both waters. I think it's a similar or hopefully a good metaphor for scripted versus unscripted in that the team, if you look at what a scripted podcast, I mean, some of the shows that we produce, I mean, it is a long list of humans that have to come together and make a thing. Whereas unscripted, I mean, you can get away with just a couple people, smart and talented people, to be successful with respect to an improv or an interview show that you just kind of show up, ask these questions and move on. But scripted, much harder in my book.
Okay, so if you could cook with any storyteller from any medium, who's accompanying you?
Pablo Neruda, but that's kind of cheating because he's not alive and he's a poet and would speak Spanish and I might not understand a lot of what he's saying. I probably would not. I need to pick another person. That was the first name that popped into my head. It would be a fun hang while cooking. Definitely not Rachel Ray because she would just run circles around me.
Is she a storyteller though?
Maybe not. No, she's just so good at what she does. Oh, I was going to say Anthony Bourdain. How about Anthony Bourdain?
Yes.
Can they be dead? Is that okay?
Yeah. Dead or living. Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I love that answer. What's the most surprising thing you've learned about yourself since becoming a digital nomad?
I thought I was more stable and naturally happy. I think on the outside, it seems like I'm happier than I might be. I really need routines. I need structure more than I thought. I thought I could kind of just go with the flow and loosey-goosey. And it may sound like that's who I am. And maybe it's more of a projection because I've really learned, just joined this hiking club. I mentioned the hiking thing earlier. And it's like just one small step in the direction where I need to go to create community because I have such extroverted needs, that social community infrastructure. So, yeah, I think I just learned that my happiness is not a natural byproduct of me just floating through life. It's a result of a lot of structure that when you lived in one place where I grew up for three decades, versus I moved basically every year for 10 years. And even though I think there was some searching there and some method to that madness, I think ultimately what I've come away with learning about myself is I need routines.
And if you were to define the United States of America As an American immigrant living outside the U.S., looking at the U.S. from afar, how would you do it?
A messy melting pot that doesn't always see its own reflection accurately. So maybe looking at clown mirrors.
Ah, I love that. Jeremiah, this was so good. I am so glad we had this conversation. Tell us where we can find your podcasts. What are the social media handles people can go and follow?
Absolutely. I host a podcast on our little boutique production company network. My podcast is called Your Next Chapter. And I'm just like so excited about when people pivot in their life, when they say they're doing one thing and they say, no, I want to do something completely different and start over. And so that's what the focus of the show is. And I ask every guest, just like I asked you, what's your next chapter? That can always change when you hopefully come back one day. And our company, my company, is called Next Chapter Podcasts. It was named by our former COO, Tracy Kaplan. I want to give her a shout out because she's pretty instrumental to what we have built together. But Next Chapter Podcast can be followed on all social media at NC Podcasts, plural. And the website is nextchapterpodcast.com. And I know we're on your podcast already, and I've given you so much love already, but I just think you're so well positioned in this moment. I mean, it's heartbreaking, but I just think it's so important what you're doing.
And I love the work that you're doing. And I hope sometime in the future, we can really collaborate beyond these interviews. Thank you. I'm really honored. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's always so much fun to sit down with a fellow podcaster who has a similar vision for where the podcast industry should go. And I know Jeremiah said we shouldn't be using the word should. He is a great conversationalist. I am so impressed with his work. So if you haven't checked out any of their podcasts, please do. You can follow them on socials. And come back next week when I have another incredible story. This podcast episode is produced and written by me, Sadia Khan. The editorial review is done by Shay Yu. Our sound designer and editor is Lou Raskin. Immigrantly theme music is done by Simon Hutchinson. Other music by Epidemic Sound. Come back. We'll talk some more.